Good afternoon. This is Carol Moyle, Committee Assistant, Environment and Energy Committee. Today is Friday, January 21st, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room E. Agenda for today will include House Bill 2237 relating to hazardous waste and House Bill 2238 also relating to hazardous waste.
Take note of those that are here. Those that are not here are excused. Today we're going to have hearings on two bills, House Bill 2238 and House Bill 2237. Both of these are relating to hazardous waste. We're going to take House Bill 2238, and before we start, I would like to have Beth Sampson, our committee administrator, just briefly go through what the bill does, or what parts we need to look out for.
Thank you. House Bill 2238 essentially grants DEQ the authority over air and water transporters of hazardous waste. Until page 2, lines 9 through 15, any changes are just basically language cleanup. Subsections 7, 8, and 9, lines 9 through 15 on page 2, do away with the phrase "in accordance with a license," etc. Namely, because that would limit definition within the section of hazardous waste collection site to only those who did have a license. So that is changing that aspect of it. Going down further to section 2, this purports to amend ORS 459610. This entire section is amended in House Bill 2237 and therefore is not necessary to House Bill 2238. Section 3, beginning on line 36, would give the DEQ authority to investigate any complaint made against an air or water transporter of hazardous waste. Section 4 gives it the authority to, upon its own motion, investigate an air and water transporter. Section 5 would give it the authority to operate a monitoring, inspection, and surveillance program of air and water transporters. Going to Section 6, air and water transporters would be subject without hearing or prior notice to being halted if determined to be a clear and immediate danger to public health. Section 7, subsection 2, makes air and water transporters liable for a civil penalty. And Section 8, subsection 2, does not relate directly to air and water transporters, but relates to hazardous waste in general and gets away with advance notice where an intentional violation is found. Those are the main substantive items addressed by House Bill 2238. Now, if we go to House Bill 2237, this institutes an annual fee to be levied against every generator, air, or water transporter and licensee under the hazardous waste statutes. Licensees include storage, disposal, and treatment sites. The additions here are the generator, air, and water transporters. Section 2 is exactly the same as Section 5 of House Bill 2238, and then is essentially unnecessary within House Bill 2237.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions of Beth just
was
as far
section
as
section 5?
The sections.
Section 5, 22.
Representative Tracy?
Well, two questions. First of all, going to section 2 and 2237 and section 5. What you're saying is we don't need it in both bills.
Right, exactly.
But
one or the other.
One or the other. I'm assuming, of course,
it's the identical amendment to the identical section.
Secondly, can you give us a little bit of brief information on where we're at the moment as far as regulation of transportation?
Air and water transporters are not regulated by the DEQ at this point. There is my understanding from Stan Biles, who will be talking to you, that there are, however, at this point, no air and water transporters at the moment. He'll explain that to you.
We'll go through.
Do you have the list of people that are testifying?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Van Leeuwen.
Just for a review, what is the legal description of hazardous waste? I'm still not saying it right.
I provided the statute in front of you, and it's in the definition section 459.410, I believe.
Representative Van Leeuwen, on each of our, in front of each of our places is hazardous waste definitions. We are going to start the hearings on these bills in reverse today. We will start the hearing on House Bill 2238 first, which gives the DEQ authority to inspect, monitor, and survey the water and air transporters. We only have two people signed up on House Bill 2238. Stan Biles, this is on behalf of DEQ, so Stan Biles would come on up. And Stan, you brought with you Rich Ritter?
Writer. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Stan Biles, Department of Environmental Quality. With me today is Rich Ryder, who is the administrator of our hazardous waste program. Starting with House Bill 2238, I would like to make just a few general introductory comments, and then with the committee's discretion, allow Rich to comment further on the specific changes in the bill and respond to any questions that the committee might have. 2238 really speaks to several issues. We have identified three specifically in the material that's being distributed. We are seeking through the bill to close some existing loopholes that are in existence with the state statutes that would allow us in our enforcement program to have a better enforcement of statutes which have already been authorized, some as recent as the 81 session. But whereas some of the initial enabling legislation was adopted, some of the legislation necessary to facilitate our enforcement was not adopted at the same time. And so some of the language that's included in 2238 will allow the department to enforce language previously adopted by the legislature. The first area of emphasis includes the definitions, the definition section in 2238, and it speaks to the definition of hazardous waste collection and treatment and disposal facilities. I think Rich has some more comments on how that relates specifically to our enforcement, but that's the first area of the bill and the first part of the statutes that that we will be speaking to. The second issue relates to authority adopted in the 81 session that relates to our department's ability to conduct investigations, inspections, and enforcement actions. That's the language that we should have included in a bill adopted in the 81 session, but it was not included, and will enhance our ability to conduct those investigations. And the last area that the committee staff has already identified relates to the speed at which the department can undertake certain civil actions in the case of intentional deposit of hazardous waste in the state. We are in the language that's proposed in the latter part of 2238, proposing that we have the authority in certain circumstances to take enforcement action, take the civil penalty action without the 5-day warning notice. So that will essentially speed up the process, which we feel is in order considering the potential environmental and health harm that can be caused by the improper disposal of hazardous waste. There is a section I would like to mention, section 2 of the bill, which relates to our ability to charge fees for the generators and the air and water transporters of hazardous waste. This language is included in an identical format in 2237. We would propose an amendment that would remove Section 2 from 2238 and deal with that issue separately in House Bill 2237. It's a strict financial issue that does not necessarily relate directly to the issues that are raised in 2238, so we would like to deal with that one separately in the other bill that's before the committee today. With those brief introductory comments, I would like to introduce Rich Ryder, who has been the administrator of our hazardous waste program, that can discuss in a bit more detail our proposed amendments.
Thank you, Stan. The first deficiency that Stan related to was this definitional problem. And this came to our attention as we were involved in several enforcement cases, and we were looking at the statutes and trying to determine what violations had actually occurred. And in discussions with our attorneys, it was pointed out to us that relative to the three definitions of what is a hazardous waste collection site, treatment site, and disposal site, that it's nearly impossible to violate it. Because one definition prohibits people from establishing, constructing, and operating these activities without a license. But if you look up the definition of what a disposal site is, it's a facility that has a license. And so the two definitions sort of form a circle, and you can never really violate it. On the other hand, someone could go out and establish a site without a license and not be in violation of the rule. And so we feel that's a major deficiency that has been built into this program all this time, and only recently, as we've had more resources to do routine inspections and complaint investigations, has it come to our attention that in actually going into a hearing or into a court case, we may lose on a technicality because of this definitional problem. As Stan mentioned, the second deficiency relates to enforcement authority unique to air and water transporters. We were before the legislature in 81 and sought authority to regulate the transportation of hazardous waste by air and water modes, and the legislature saw fit to give us that authority. However, we did not carry that authority through to the enforcement sections of our statute. And that's what we propose by, I think it's sections 3, 4, and 5. Yeah, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So it's taking existing statutes that already give us authority to conduct inspections of generators or people who store, treat, and dispose, and give us the same authority to conduct inspections or to take compliance action against people who transport hazardous waste by air and water. And the third deficiency was brought to our attention by those people who administer our civil penalty program, and they pointed out to us that historically the department has had authority in other environmental programs such as air and water and solid waste to waive the 5-day warning period if there is a very serious public health or environmental threat. And it was their opinion that we should seek that same authority in the area of mismanagement of hazardous waste because of the potential public health and environmental implications related to the improper disposal of those materials. So I'd be pleased to answer any questions on those three general areas or other aspects of our existing program.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
It seems to me we're talking a lot of generalizations, I think, for just general knowledge of the committee. Could you give some specific examples of some of these hazards and where you've run into problems specifically?
Okay. The question was asked earlier, you know, what is the definition of a hazardous waste? The statute speaks in general terms about pesticide residues and pesticide manufacturing residues and other residues from manufacturing and commercial activities. In turn, the Environmental Quality Commission has further defined those general definitions to specifically identify materials such as materials which are ignitable. These would be materials with a flash point less than 140 degrees. Some common materials that you might be able to relate to are things like gasoline would meet that definition. If you discarded gasoline, you would be discarding a hazardous waste. More commonly, we see industrial solvents such as acetone or toluene or xylene. They're used for degreasing purposes, or they're used to mix with other materials to make them more flowable. And after they've been used and are intended to be discarded, they would come under this particular definition. The major hazard there is one of fire, potential to explode and to burn very vigorously. Another class of materials would be corrosive materials. These would be your very strong acids, pH less than 2, or corrosive material, pH is greater than 12. Again, common examples would be like sulfuric acid or hydrochloric acid, tend to be used by the electronics industry and the plating industries, or sodium hydroxide on the caustic side. And again, the caustic materials tend to be used for cleaning purposes in the plating industry. We have a third category, which we don't see too many materials in that category, but we have a category of reactive waste. These are materials which tend to be unstable at normal temperature and pressure. An example would be a magnesium metal. If you had very fine particles of magnesium metal, they would spontaneously combust without any outside ignition sources. And lastly, we have our toxic category, and this gets at the pesticide residues, the chlorinated solvents such as trichloroethylene or 111-trichloroethane. Again, those solvents are used for degreasing purposes. So what our concern is, say specifically relative to the authority we're asking on this issuance of a civil penalty, would be someone taking one of these materials that present a direct hazard to people or to the environment and indiscriminately disposing of them in some place where people will come in contact with them. So, such as, late at night, setting 5 drums of acetone, next to a school or in a shopping center parking lot, which is an actual incident that we had to deal with about 2 years ago. We got a call from Mall 205. They had 12 55-gallon drums dropped off in their parking lot. Didn't know what was inside of them. They didn't belong to any of the stores at the shopping mall. So they called us in to see if we could analyze what was in the drums, which we did for them, and then they asked for our advice as to how they could be disposed of. Another incident we just dealt with this past year was 15 drums dropped off on a vacant lot in northeast Portland. When we finally got to analyzing what was in the drums, one of the drums contained PCB capacitors. 4 of the drums contained rags and dirt contaminated with PCBs. Several of the drums contained an oil product which was non-hazardous but potentially was flammable. But it didn't meet the 140-degree Fahrenheit criteria. And then there were several drums of ink sludges from a printing operation. And that incident is currently under investigation now with the help of EPA, and we think some enforcement action should be taken in the next month or two. But here's some examples of where we think we need to be able to respond quickly if we know who the perpetrators of the violation were. And to give someone a second chance doesn't seem to be appropriate.
Madam Chair. Yeah.
Representative Crew.
Stan, you mentioned in your testimony that you felt like these were closing loopholes. Could you give a little more of an explanation on why, in your estimation, this is a bill that simply closes loopholes?
Well, the Madam Chair, Representative Troop, I suppose the best example is the one that that Rich cited that relates to the definition sections of that we have in 2238, whereby to be a site, a proper hazardous waste disposal site, at least in our minds, you need to have a license issued by the department. If you are, by the definition, disposing at a site without a license, the way that the current language is drafted, it becomes almost impossible, according to our attorneys, to be able to take enforcement action under those circumstances.
And your attorneys have looked at the law and determined that that was not the original intent.
That's true. This is the type of, I suppose, a catch-22 that you might describe it as, whereby I think that the words that Rich described, it comes full circle, and it just prevents our ability to take any type of enforcement action in a case where I think it was very clear from the initial language that was drafted that was not the type of circumstance that we wanted to go without some type of penalty in the state. Yet currently, our enforcement hands essentially are tied, not through the specifics of the language or the intent of the initial legislation, but more likely by the lack of language that was included. And so the language that we've proposed this session clarifies that, and we think gives us the authority to take action in those circumstances. I'm not sure if we can identify a circumstance where we have specifically attempted to date to take that type of enforcement action. I don't... and ran into a brick wall.
Yeah, the example I just cited relative to the 15 drums in northeast Portland, were we to have the lead in that particular case rather than EPA, we may have problems actually taking, say, a civil or criminal action because there may be no violation. There was a site created by the fact that these 15 drums were disposed of promiscuously. But you really don't have a site unless you have a license.
Did the disposal agent actually own the parcel of land?
No.
Did not have permission from the landowner?
No.
Representative Traynor.
Tom, I think you're on to something that's bothering me in this whole thing. You know, you gave us a bunch of spook stories of some problems that you found existing, but I have a real problem trying to identify how those problems you've given us as examples relate to what this bill said. And it's got me a bit confused somehow. I guess I need some more explanation.
Okay. Again, the example on the 15 drums. Our attorneys are telling us there's really nothing we could do while illegal disposal occurred. You know, in actuality, 15 drums were dumped on someone's property without their permission, without their knowledge. In legal sense, there was no illegal disposal because of these definitional problems. In order to be a site, you have to have a license. And, you know, by definition, and you can't create a site without having a license.
Representative Traynor.
It appears, though, that you're going much further than talking about the dumping of these 15 drums on somebody else's property.
Okay. Yeah, the other amendments, sections 3 through 7, deal with authority that was given to us by the past legislature to adopt rules to regulate air and water transporters. And had we properly prepared the bill last session, we would assume the legislature would have wanted to give us authority to also enforce those rules that they ask us to adopt. But we failed to amend the provisions whereby it gives the authority to conduct investigations, to do monitoring, and then to take enforcement action for violations. So it would seem to us that, you know, you would not want us to be in a position to have a set of rules which we have no mechanism to enforce. You know, if that's the position we'd want to be in, it would seem you'd want to take away the rulemaking authority and not have us regulate air and water transporters. So the situation now relative to air and water transporters is we could adopt rules to regulate them, but we'd have no mechanism to enforce those rules if there were violations.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I'm starting to get the picture about the licensing of transport and so on, and you just said, you know, it's necessary to have a license for the site type thing. Haven't we been covered on transport? I know in past sessions we went through leaky dump trucks with fish guts, you know, and all this type of thing. Where is this all involved in this thing? If someone is dropping things off of trucks en route to the site, is that covered under this bill? Are you creating a site because something falls off the truck?
Well, yeah, in this particular bill, we're proposing no additional regulation relative to motor carriers, trucks, or railroads. That currently is handled by PUC. And they have the authority, and they implement the program. Now, if a truck is going down the highway and spills a hazardous waste, then PUC already has a requirement that requires them to be responsible to correct and to clean up that spill. At this time, if there was a ship involved, and that is something that could occur because there are wastes coming into Oregon to use the Arlington disposal site, from the state of Alaska, and some of those hazardous wastes are moved via water into the Portland Harbor area where it's transferred onto trucks and then transported up to the Arlington site. And so you could have a situation now where that ship spills material into the Willamette River, and without these enforcement authorities that we are asking for, we would have no mechanism to cite them for a violation, even though they violated the set of rules that Commission may have adopted. We have no authority to enforce those rules for a violation.
Another matter.
Representative Anderson.
It's really major oversight.
It was.
Well, don't you currently have maybe oil spills aren't hazardous waste, I don't know, but it seems to me that's always been a continuing problem with the ships and so on. Where is the difference between the oil spill and the gasoline spill?
Okay. Oil would generally not meet the definition of 140 degrees Fahrenheit or less. So oil spills are handled through the water quality program, and there's a very specific set of statutes and regulations in the water quality program of DEQ that makes it a violation to place oil into public waters or onto land. But by definition, those would not be a hazardous waste.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Tru.
Possibly to facilitate the discussion, I'm not sure who else you have to testify on the bill, but it seems like that some of us on the committee are searching a little bit to see if there's actually some intent here to broaden the law beyond what could be considered a loophole that was inadvertently left. And if there are other people that are planning to testify, possibly that might get us into what those particular issues are and give us some more food for discussion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tru. Representative Van Leeuwen, did you have a question?
Well, I've got several concerns over the bill in general. I just want some real examples of what this really does refer to as I see it, especially on the licensing, which you're hoping to transfer over to House Bill 2237. As I read it, does that mean if someone in my district is hauling fuel from home to forest or home to field, that they've got to each get that license you're talking about here? Is that what it's saying?
No, the license that's referred to here is if you're managing a waste, you know, material intended to be discarded, or a residue of a manufacturing process. Fuel is a commodity, and the only regulation would be PUC or DOT, federal DOT requirements on commodities being shipped on public highways. So our proposals here would not relate to commodities. Now, commodities may have exactly the same characteristics, you know, gasoline intended to be used and gasoline intended to be discarded would both meet this criteria of 140 degrees Fahrenheit or less. But where it's intended to be used, it's not regulated by DEQ. Where it's intended to be disposed of or discarded, then it's regulated. So if the hauler in your district was hauling a waste, something intended for disposal, then we would regulate that transportation. But we do not regulate the commodity.
That would be under the PUC.
Only under PUC, and they primarily are interested in safety considerations, you know, the mechanical soundness of the vehicle being used and driver training and hours of service.
Rich, you still don't have those. They wouldn't require a license anyhow, would they? You would just have licenses for disposal, storage, and treatment.
That's correct. There is a registration requirement for transporters, merely stating to PUC or in